Welcome, everyone, to the First Name Basis podcast. This is our remote edition where we chat with industry leaders and tribal scale employees to have an authentic but a very informal conversation about innovation, the news of today. And with me today, I got a friend of mine who I got to know early on in my career, Mike Stern from Connected. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Sheetal. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad we get to like bring you on here for what I'm hoping is going to be a very interesting hour. Mike, I wanted to talk, first of all, about our history. You and I got a chance to meet each other, well, about over a decade ago, probably. And what was your big break like? How did you end up in this tech field and running this awesome company, Connected?
Well, thanks. Extreme Labs, right? The Extreme Labs Mafia. My big break into Extreme, so 2009, trying to get a job actually in strategy consulting, was interning at BlackBerry Ventures, and right. I just got my MBA, but for a bunch of reasons, I gave up the prestigious high paying path to McKinsey, and I
Let's talk about that for a second. Because most MBAs go, hey, I think I'm going to go and take this high-priced job doing strategy consulting. And you made a decision back then, being like, let me go make a quarter of what that salary is and go take a shot in this new world. What made you have the gravitas to go and do something like that?
I don't know if it was gravitas. It was probably more the recession. The only jobs that I could have gotten would have been in the oil fields in Alberta. That's where you know the big three strategy firms were hiring at the time, and with my time at BlackBerry, I was getting super interested in mobile. So I took a 25% salary of what I what I might have.
It was like three quarters less than what you would have gotten.
Yeah, exactly. Joined a 15-person mobile startup called Extreme, Extreme Labs. And it was easily the best career decision of my life outside of starting Connected. I'll never forget my first day. I want to make sure I tell you this story because I don't think you know this. I show up at Extreme. I'm in the elevator with James Kendall. Remember him?
Yeah, of course.
His first day too. He's now a great engineering leader, but we're both wearing khakis, button-up shirt. I'm wearing a blazer and holding a briefcase. The minute that I walk in, I see James is escorted to his carefully set up workstation. And Leroy, remember Leroy?
I totally remember Leroy.
Leroy points at me and goes, "Mike, I need you over here." And I'm like, "Sure." And he says, points to all these boxes, IKEA boxes, and says, "We have all of our interns starting tomorrow. I need you to build all this IKEA furniture." And so, by the end of the day, I'm thinking, not only have I given up the pay and the prestige of McKinsey, but now I'm like the IKEA desk building guy at work. But it was, it obviously worked out really well. It was, like I said, the best career decision.
I had a similar experience where they were like, "Hey, Sheetal, this is your new office," and there's just a bunch of boxes on the floor. And very similar, they were like, "Yeah, that's your desk. You're going to have to set it up." And I was like, "What's going on?"
Yeah, I don't remember you getting an office.
No, not at Extreme. Not at Extreme, at another firm.
Okay.
Where I was working, but you know what?
Everything at Extreme, that story, says a lot about the culture there. Everything revolved around the tooling, the process, the equipment to make our developers work better and smarter. Big testament to the guys, Farhan, Sunny, Amr, Rahul, just the fact that we were located downtown. Like, I don't know if you remember, but like, it was unheard of for tech companies.
Everything was in the burbs. Yeah.
We had like dashboards everywhere. There were rituals, process, great equipment. yeah, it just kind of flew in the face of what I imagined a dev shop would be. But it really pointed to where like the value is being created. And, sure. And then of course, like the results spoke for themselves. You know, we went on to help, you know, ship Uber's products, Twitter, we helped Facebook go mobile. You know, we were creating, like exponential value, for our clients and doing it through building products, not PowerPoints. And so that really, you know, stuck with me. It kind of made me hooked on this new wave of professionalizing, you know, the craft of product development, software development in particular at Extreme.
I remember, you know, one of my first week, and I'm like sitting near you and like just trying to learn through osmosis. Here I am, like I'm gonna come in and like work with Mike and Jeremy and these guys, and I'm just gonna try to learn how to sell this Extreme way. And I remember vividly like having a conversation on like my third day with Rahul and Amr going, yeah, you know, I've gone through like all these materials and here's the things that I'm doing. And, you know, and Amr looked at me and he was just like, there's no playbook for this stuff. And he's like, you know what? You're not at an organization where you got a sandbox and you got to go play it. He's like, it's okay if you color outside of the lines. And then Rahul looked at me and he's like, fail, dude, go fail fast. Go and just go do it. And that like first week, it was the first time in my career where I've just been told like, there's not this scripted way that you have to do everything. You can just go out there and try new things. And if you F up, come back and tell us you F up, it's okay. And that comfort and feeling, I think, really helped, you know, you, myself, Jer, and everybody else around there really get into this mindset that we're here to add a bunch of value and we're going to F up along the way, and that's okay. So let's stick to the goal of being able to add value in everything we do.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, going back to the four guys, right? Like Amr, Sunny, Farhan, Rahul, they're so different, right? In their management style and leadership style. And,
which you and I got to say also came to frustration points with that.
I think you were better at, you know, being comfortable expressing that, you know, in the office. I was, you know, still a little buttoned up, still probably wearing that blazer. No, I mean, and hey, that's part of it, right? Like getting comfortable with having, you know, strong opinions and hearing, you know, debate, was another big like unlearning from the whole MBA and sort of previous tracks that I was on. Those guys, they really taught me more about business than I learned at the MBA. And I think Extreme, you know, as a sort of foundation for lots of careers, you know, can't be overstated. I 2 years ago, I did some research on LinkedIn and I found out that there are back then 30 startups that emerged out of Extreme alum. That's 2 years ago.
And look at now. I mean, look at the amazing successes. I mean, you said it earlier in this podcast, right? Like, we're the Extreme Labs Mafia. And, you know, there was a question that was asked, I saw, and I think on Twitter like 4 years ago, and it was, what is the equivalent of the Canadian PayPal Mafia? Could obviously look to BlackBerry and even before that Nortel, but I think, you know, we earned our badge of honor going through the Extreme Labs Mafia. Right?
Like, totally. Yeah.
So you saw, I mean, so 30, and that was like 2 years ago, and now it's even bigger. Everybody's going on to do bigger and better things, which is just amazing. It's great to see. And we also still support each other. You know, one of the things I want to bring up is, when I was saying, hey, I'm going to do this podcast with Mike, they're like, well, don't you guys compete? And like, why would you go do that? And like, everyone thinks we got this war between us. And I'm like, no, I think Mike and I are always about like the high tide is going to make all boats rise. We got two amazing organizations that are independently doing great work. And we're going to bring our like muscle and power to this whole ecosystem. And I think we're stronger together than separated.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I I've had folks at Connected sometimes sort of assume or presume that we're like really competitive and first of all, we had a ton of fun working together at Extreme. But then I think there's like something sort of special that happens when peers go on to found companies like around the same time. And you kind of develop a even deeper bond. And I mean, you and I have only hung out a handful of times, but I don't know if you've noticed this. Every time we've hung out since, we kind of go like 0 to 100 on like the top three most important things that we're working on. And
right away.
Yeah, it's special. It's great to have that. And I think there should be more of that, that sort of building stronger alumni connections and sort of coordination and just helping each other out. It happens a lot with the Extreme Mafia already, but I'm glad that we can do this.
Yeah, no, for sure. All right, let's continue on. So, we went through Extreme. We had an amazing acquisition point, and Mike was like, I got this itch. And talk to us about like the entrepreneurial drive you had and how you started Connected.
Sure. So, where do I start? I mean, it really started at Extreme, right? Like the whole origin story of Connected is sort of centered around some of the things that we saw at Extreme. Extreme didn't just work with like Silicon Valley tech companies. We also worked with large legacy like banks, retailers, media companies. And there was this really like familiar pattern that we saw. And I know you saw this like over and over again. And that pattern was that execs from these large companies would come to us with new product engagements, but their strategies were already defined, right? Like what to build, how to take it to market, everything down to like the feature set. And like, they were usually in the form of these like massive PDF documents.
Or it was still a very waterfall like type approach, right?
And it was usually hired out or farmed out to a firm like McKinsey. Right. And usually millions of dollars would be spent on those, big strategies and years before it landed on our table.
I'm sure you still see this. Sometimes I see this like digital strategy of a product that a large enterprise wants to build. And it's like, this has been 2 years in the making. I'm like, well, your market conditions and a lot of things have changed in 2 years. Like,
Exactly right. Yeah, and yet, the problem that we had was that we weren't really positioned as a, strategy plus execution shop. We were positioned as the best mobile dev shop. And I think we were, but we would see these PDFs, and I'm sure you remember this too. Like, leadership would look at these documents, or interns would look at these documents and immediately we would be able to say, this is off, right? This is either like, it doesn't take into account the speed at which we really need to be getting into market. It's not technically feasible. It's not technically ambitious enough was often one of the things, but because we didn't really have the wherewithal or the process to have that conversation, we'd end up, not being able to help our clients as much as, I thought we could have. We would build the app on time, on budget. We'd build it using the latest, methodology and build it the right way, but it wasn't necessarily the right thing. And I can't overstate the opportunity cost of building the wrong thing, especially in an era of exponential value creation. And the land grab that existed in mobile in those days. It wasn't just value creation. It was the speed to kind of own categories. It was also like the morale and the kind of the careers of our people who were just kind of, it was being stunted because we just couldn't, do as much as we knew we could have. That pattern is really the origin tough, story of Connected. Right?
I think it's tough. I mean, you're talking about you hit so many points over there that resonate with me. Obviously, I mean, we do a lot of the same type of interactions that we're having, but it really sucks for our people who couldn't work anywhere. They could work at Google, Facebook, anywhere, to really go and say, oh, I'm going to go and do this legacy strategy that's built on top of old tech from 2 years ago, when I know there's a better way, but nobody wants to listen. Right? Like, there's, it obviously, it created a lot of friction when organizations went and took that larger waterfall type approach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's disheartening, especially when at the same time, you know, the desk beside you, you're helping ship a product for Uber or Facebook. Right. And, right. And so, you know, well, like that just happened so many times. Right. And, mm-hmm. And so, you know, my co-founder at Connected, Damian McCabe, also, Extreme alum.
Extreme, yeah.
We kind of, you know, came together on that insight, and we envisioned a new kind of firm, you know, not a completely different firm from Extreme, more of like, I think of it as like an extension or a 2.0, much the same way, you know, I think Tribal is doing, you know, really, really well now, you know, as well. And so like what Connected is, you know, to put it in sort of Extreme language, like in the same way that Extreme professionalized the craft of engineering, we are trying to extend that to the other disciplines as well that make up a product team: design, research, right. You know, product, and not just from like a discipline approach, but also from a product development lifecycle approach. So, mm-hmm. you know, discovery, delivery, being able to do both continuous discovery and delivery at the same time.
Yeah, at the same time.
And so we're, you know, in the same way that like that kind of first day at Extreme, you know, really helped me appreciate how much attention was being paid to like the right tooling and systems and process around engineering. We're trying to bring that same hyper focus to full product teams. And we're, yeah, I guess almost 6 years old now. We're around 150 people. We're building, you know, greenfield products and very well-known products for clients like Facebook and Google and Bose, RBC, Mozilla, and a bunch of others. And, you know, I still feel like we're just getting started on this, you know, figuring out the next thing. We still have engagements where, you know, clients come to us and want to sort of silo how they work with us. And it usually is, you know, one or two engagements before we can, you know, really deliver our full value prop. So there's lots to figure out. But, you know, I think the insight that we had, you know, I know both of us, we were told we were crazy for trying to, you know, do what we did.
We still are.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think we've landed on something, and now we're just, you know, accelerating even more through, you know, going beyond lean and agile and some of the old, more siloed ways of thinking about product development.
So I think there's a couple of key things that I think, again, that you hit on. I think we're totally touching the tip of the iceberg, right? Like, we talk about not only how do we build world-class digital products, you know, the five-star products that you're going to use in your everyday life, but we also start to look at our clients being like, how can we help them get better, right? Like, one of the things that I started to really focus our organization around is like, how do we help transform the organizations that we're working with that are still really siloed, as you said, and it may take one, two, three engagements before they start really, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid and start understanding that there is a better way. It's really to like start transforming them around their people, their process, their tools. And when you start looking at those three like pillars, especially of like, how can we upskill your people? How can we change your processes? What are going to be the tool sets you need to work on in the future? You know, there is this light bulb that goes off in a lot of the organizations that you guys work with and we work with. You go, oh my God, this was a lot easier and a lot less frustrating to come out and actually deliver a product that's focused around the consumer, that is actually something that the user is going to want to work with. And that, when you see that happen, you're like, we are just starting right now. Like, we haven't even, you know, gotten to the path of the type of innovation and amazing experiences we could go and deliver to our customers. Mike, before we keep going, I want to switch gears. I want people to get to know my buddy. So I do a little I'm going to fire a couple questions off at you just for the users who never worked at Extreme and don't know the real Mike, but really to get to know you beyond this guy who started this awesome organization called Connected. Okay. What's your favorite movie?
This is so embarrassing, but you know, I got to shout out The Bodyguard.
Really?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It has it all. Genre crossing, you know, amazing music, amazing storyline. And yeah, gotta put that number one.
You and I were road warriors. We were traveling all the time. If you could jump on a plane right now and go somewhere, where would you go?
The Mediterranean, Italy or Spain.
All right. I like it. Yeah. I like it. We need to give a shout out to a small business. If you were able to go get a whole large group of friends and be able to go out to eat, where would you invite them?
Bar Ravel.
I love it. It's such a, you're going right this whole Mediterranean theme. last but not least, you and your beautiful wife just had a baby. What is the most frustrating thing about having a newborn as a first-time dad?
Well, thanks. And yeah, we, Annabelle is 5 weeks old, frustrating / terrifying, you know, as a new parent, you kind of cling on to every little breath. I'm thankful that we have all these new connected products that help monitor, you know, blood oxygen and all these things to ease the anxiety a bit. But, yeah, like I was saying when we kicked this off, she kind of goes through this 3-hour cycle of pooping, burping, sleeping, and I love every minute of it. It's just amazing, and it's been an awesome experience for Emma and me. Thanks for asking.
Oh, that's awesome! Congrats, man. All right, well, it's a good transition. We're going into talk a little bit about the tough times of today. It was almost like a light switch where both of our organizations just kind of went, whoa, the whole world just changed on us. And the pandemic hit. One of the things that we noticed was like, if there was ever a shift to digital, it should be rapid speed and happen right now. And one of the things that we experienced at Tribal Scale was, wait a second, enterprise customers were trying to actually dry up budgets really quick as opposed to spending and doubling down when they should be. That's changed a lot now within 6 months, but what was your experience like when the pandemic hit?
Yeah, you know, so much to talk about. I won't go into a ton of the sort of macro industry, you know, or economic stuff. There's lots of smarter people than me saying a lot already. I can share, you know, from a connected perspective.
Yeah, from the connected experience, like, well, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a founder of this awesome firm, with people, with a large amount of people counting on you, right? Like, what happened?
It was really tough. Our pipeline was pretty significantly impacted. We had to let go of 10% of our workforce at a time when job prospects were really limited and people were dealing with a global pandemic. Easily the hardest thing that I've had to lead through. And personally, you know, we had a newborn on the way, some other personal issues at the same time, and it was just a lot. But big kudos to my leadership team. They really rose to the occasion. I believe they acted swiftly and kindly and intelligently. And I think we've come together as a result. We're a little leaner, especially over the last few months, but we've got this like fire under our bellies and we're growing again, and our pipeline is increasing, you know, significantly. Right. There's a quote, I'm going to butcher it, and I can't remember who said it, but many crisis situations, the weakest companies usually go away. The average companies are usually set back a few years, but the leaders, they usually come out stronger and even better positioned. I hope that's where we're netting out. And I sense that for you guys too at Tribal.
It's pretty common knowledge. I mean, we started almost our storm before the pandemic. I mean, we grew too big too fast and a lot of things broke. But one of the things I could say is like most organizations is funny, you know, our accountants at PwC were looking going, you're in like the 3rd percentile of organizations that could actually fight through this and still come out alive. And we are stronger, better, work a lot better with each other, got the scars and the learning pains together to like build upon. And you know, if you take like a wartime analogy, it's like, hey, we've conquered that war and we got this like bond and trust now where you look to your left and look to your right. You're like, you know, if we could go and do what we just went through, we could definitely start to deal with the challenges of this pandemic. And even coming out of this, like not saying we're out of this pandemic, but coming to this, now that we're 6 months into the pandemic, I feel like productivity's gone up. You know, people have actually really started to sit into their roles and say, I can be a leader at this organization. I can actually, you know, I've always said you should be a leader. And going back to the early story about Amr and Rahul saying, you know, you're not a sandbox, you don't have to play in it. But actually taking ownership to say, if there's a problem, I'm going to jump up and actually just go fix it. It's okay. And it's great to see that happening.
Well, that's amazing to hear, Sheetal. And I'm not surprised, you know, to hear that about you, given how, you know, how well I know you and just how resilient you are. You can look at it, you know, many different ways as a leader, but I think I've certainly come to terms with the fact that these kinds of crises, you know, they hit, and you can either be sort of grateful and take stock of what you've got and try to use it as a learning and growing opportunity, or you can turtle. And you know, we've seen a lot of connected leaders step up, and not just leaders, but you know, soon to be leaders. You know,
soon to be leaders. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right? Like, you know that your people who are with you through tough times and through thick and thin are the ones who are up for the challenge. They're up for the problems for tomorrow. You know, and it's good to look back. I'll say this, it's one thing to look back on and go, I'm grateful for having gone through it, but oh boy, did I hate my life actually going through it day to day.
You should have called me, man. We should have done a steak dinner. I will say, you know, I some of my most important phone calls were some of the guys that we just talked about, you know, Extreme and what an episode. And we're not through it yet, obviously. The other thing that comes to mind is like, there's this kind of saying in the Valley, like you're either a peacetime or a wartime CEO. And, I always found, you know, over the last 6 months, I found that like dichotomy to not actually be that helpful, because being a wartime, well, first, you know, what's peacetime, what's wartime? Peacetime is like a leader that leads through the good times well, and keeps, you know, people engaged when things might be, you know, otherwise kind of boring. A wartime CEO is like the CEO that is, you know, really fast, really prudent, and just prioritizes survival. The thing that's different, I think, about the pandemic is that there's a need for leadership to be both soft and, you know, swift at the same time, because it's not just a recession, it's a global health crisis. And so the pandemic style leadership, I think, is like what I've been thinking a lot about, and you know, figuring out how to do that has been, you know, the big challenge. Like you, I think, you know, we're looking at this as like a big learning opportunity for us for our careers, and just trying to make one decision at a time.
You know, that's what it is. I said this, and I was like, when I saw the challenges that were in front of Tribal Scale, it looked like a mountain, and I just had like a little wheelbarrow, and it was like, I got to move this thing, you know. And I we chipped away at it and we kept going. And eventually now, you know, we look at it going, heck, we could do it. Let's shift a little bit, because the pandemic did definitely change things. And I think, you know, we, knowing you as well, you know, giving your people the utmost importance is super, is where your mind goes right away. And that's always been a great thing about you. But let's talk a little about consumers and like the consumer behavioral shifts you're seeing. What have you been seeing now that you've been like really deep diving into product more than just engineering, right? Like seeing you being able to look at strategy and look at research and know how are you going to build better products for this new era that we're
in? Yeah, for sure. I wrote a, you've written prediction articles before, right?
Yeah, and I'm wrong, like, I don't know, 50% of the time. So it's a coin flip whenever I write them, but at least I got a fucking statement.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I wrote this predictions thing in December 2018. Okay. And I think like there's a few things that I said then that I think have actually, you know, been true. Now, I don't think a lot of people like read the article or that it had a lot of impact, but I'll replay some of it for you now because I think it's relevant. Maybe it strikes a better chord. The big thing that I was noticing, I was using this like fast food metaphor to describe consumer tech. And so the idea is that we have this, and really the extreme era, right? Like the rise of mobile is really this fast food era. And I was saying then that like, I think we were moving from a fast food era of consumer tech to more of like a health conscious wave. So what's the fast food era? It's all about like cheaper production, efficient, widespread delivery, high calorie and sugar count. It's the whole like 50s Americana McDonald's food movement. And I liken that to the experience we had at Extreme, right? Like, always available app experiences, widely distributed, simple and cheerful. Think newsfeed, Twitter, Instagram, mobile gaming. But then a recognition that while this stuff feels good, it may actually not be that good for us, like not time that well spent. And so the piece I wrote was really about this pendulum swinging towards the equivalent of like the plant-based food movement, to sustainable practices, to more niche, to more health conscious. And with that, a prediction that there'd be a rise of health and wellness tech as a category, whether it's like meditation or working out or all of these new apps that we're now, of course, seeing, you know, a ton of today.
And there's also a lot of the fast food that you're seeing today that is getting called out for being fast food.
That's right. And so with COVID, I think we're still in this trend. You know, I think if anything, it's accelerating and we're seeing health and wellness jobs to be done actually become features that are sort of horizontally across all kinds of apps that didn't used to be sort of thought of as in the health and wellness category. You know, we're seeing COVID check-ins into like workplace apps. We're seeing like blood oxygen in the Apple Watch. And so I think that's like a really important thing for product development people to have their pulse on. But I think there's this really interesting kind of counter movement and kind of this comeback of like guilty pleasures, just like we're seeing in the analog space. So, you know, you've probably seen the same reports that like desserts and baked goods are making a big comeback right now because they're kind of soothing.
I see it on my waist, dude. I've gained 22 pounds since the summer.
So it's kind of interesting to see like that play out digitally. We're seeing a comeback of guilty pleasure app experiences. You know, I think we're seeing a rise in, you know, TikTok. We're seeing a rise in mobile gaming. We're seeing a rise in, comment engagement, like on Twitter. And these things maybe are supposedly like soothing us, but maybe they're actually still pretty bad for us. Anyway, I mean, as product builders, I think we need to get really attuned to what job we are solving for. Are we helping people veg out? Are we helping them feed an addiction? or are we helping them be a better version of themselves? And I think, yeah, the result of all of this is sort of like a barbell where there's just now more emphasis on the extremes at either end.
Well, I think the barbell analogy is super important because like you'll have one of your customers and a consumer product you're building that, you know, when you watch a Social Dilemma, they're like, yeah, we want engagement to go up. Of course we want engagement. Why wouldn't you want engagement to go up?
Don't say anything about the Social Dilemma. I haven't watched yet.
Okay. It's really talking to what you're talking about, but obviously, you know, saying, hey, these are things and mechanisms that we know, even from our back in our extreme days of like looking at design and app flow and what we could do to really keep people engaged and when to send the right push notification to get them coming back and doing more. And there, it is a barbell approach because at what point does it become unhealthy? And I think you're seeing it at the biggest levels right now, right? You're seeing it with, you know, at the time of us filming this right now, we got a presidential debate coming on tonight. These polarizing opinions that are happening out there because we're keep feeding the information, whether it be right or wrong, that's creating this polar polarization. So I love your analogy of like, there needs to be a barbell approach of saying, hey, what are we going to do that's right, not only for the consumer product, but actually for your consumer?
Well, that, you know, maybe this will sound kind of like capitalistic, but you know, I think that over the arc of history, right, like the companies that prioritize building product and feature in a way that's both beneficial for the end user and the business are the ones that sustain themselves over the long term. And so, you know, as much as we can talk about some of the sort of toxic aspects of let's say Facebook, you know, we also see that they are really committed to evolving their mission statement, to getting towards time well spent, towards experiences like, you know, the Facebook portal that enable like deeper, more meaningful connections. And so, you know, I think it's really hard to be able to prioritize, you know, solving for both what's good for the end user and the business at the same time. But I think that over a long period of time, if you can repeatedly do that, you may start out making a Big Mac, but eventually you'll be a Whole Foods.
You can go get a salad.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's.
Yeah, we've actually seen a pretty uptick in demand on and I'll give credit to like the enterprises that we work with actually talking to us about like, hey, how can we be more ethical? How can we build more ethical digital products? And you know, we've actually started publishing more content about it and like what we see can go in the place of what ethical design needs to be, what ethical digital products need to be, and what they actually mean. So it's definitely an uptick. So I think you're absolutely right. The ones that are also caring about their consumer, knowing that hey, there can be an effect that is not okay for them, are the ones that are going to really, you know, have much more longevity. Yeah, I know we're coming to the top of the hour. What are some key takeaways for our listeners who sit on the side of actually building digital products? What are three things you want them to take away from you that they should keep in their mind when trying to build 5-star digital products?
I mean, for us at Connected, and I think for all companies in our category of like product development services, we need to move beyond the siloed language and methodologies of, you know, 10, 20 years ago of like just agile or design thinking or lean, and towards what we talk about a lot at Connected, which is product thinking. And product thinking is really this kind of frontier way of you know, building teams and leveraging, you know, tools, tactics, techniques to create, you know, more value for end users and for customers. At Connected, we have our Connected Playbook, and it's this deck of cards that encompasses the kind of entirety of our techniques and tools and methods that we use for building better products. And importantly, it's written in language that whether you're a designer or a business person or a an engineer, you know, you can understand. I encourage, you know, your audience to check out connected.io/playbook, cool. where you can download it for free. It's really, you know, you want three things. I'll give you the three kind of core principles of product thinking. Sure. Principle one, unification. So product development teams unify as peers before the product. So the product mm-hmm. comes first, not your discipline, your silo. Yeah. Number two,
non-important, because you see so much friction there, right? Like that's where if a team's putting themselves before the product, that's the majority of the problems we see.
Dude, I'm still so surprised, you know, how many, you know, designers I meet who are super well-versed in design thinking, but have no idea what agile is or, you know, the tenets of like continuous integration or continuous delivery. Like these are, there needs to be a shared vocabulary and way of just working together if you want to build better products. The best products always have integrated teams behind them. And so this idea of like unification, not everybody being an expert at all things, but at least there being some common foundation mm-hmm. is sort of principle one. Principle two is nonlinear progress. You and I, you know very well seeing, you know, the types of products we've shipped over the years that unlike in the analog world, in software, products can have exponential value creation. And mm-hmm. It's the team's job to capture and deliver continual progress for both the user and the business sure. towards that end. And if you do it right, you can, you know, my favorite example is Instagram, right? 15 product development people creating, you know, $1 billion in value that today is worth probably $100 billion in value.
Yeah,
so your input does not equal your outcomes. And so that's why it's a core principle. And then thirdly is living systems. So software powered products are living organisms. They exist within complex ecosystems. And you know, this is a really deep point, but I've always thought about software like from a biological lens. And you know, I still meet lots of executives that have a roadmap that sounds something like, you know, we are going to ignore Apple and Google and build our own ecosystem or platform.
Sure.
And that's dangerous. You know, let's acknowledge the ecosystems we play in, but also our ability to, you know, thrive and take products from you know, standalone features that solve for a single, you know, core job to be done into something that lives and grows and that creates, you know, even more nonlinear progress. So those are like the big kind of principles that we think about when bringing product teams together, working with our clients. And you know, the big caveat is that it's not supposed to be a science. It's more art. The best product development people we both know, they have that foundational understanding, but then they know how to use the right tools, the right methods for the right job. You know, we just think it's important that, you know, from a connected perspective, that we're laying out some of that foundation so that product development teams everywhere can have more impact.
Dude, well said, man. Really well said. I agree with all three. Mike, thanks so much for joining me. I know you're a busy daddy right now. I appreciate you taking an hour out of your time and join us. First name basis is available on Apple, Spotify, Google, you name the platform, Facebook, YouTube, everywhere. But Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Sheetal.